This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Presented by RotoWire. Here to talk about what I think is one of the biggest cards of the year, kind of our end of summer celebration, if you will, as we get to see Khabib the Eagle Nurmagomedov defending his lightweight title against the interim lightweight champion Dustin the Diamond Poirier. I'm your host for Fight IQ, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. We're going to break this card down from top to bottom. And when I say we, I of course mean our analysts, the co-hosts. We are all three back this week. It is Chris. Also, you can see up there is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe, Sun Tzu. Guys, how you doing? I am really looking forward to this card.
I love it. I love that it's a Saturday morning card. Starts at 10:15 Eastern.
I dislike that, by the way.
Not as kind for the people on the West Coast. There is one subject of debate, though, that I've heard conflicting reports on it. I don't know if you guys could shed any light on it. One report I heard is that where they're fighting does, in fact, have some the venue does, in fact, have some form of air conditioning. And another report I heard says no. So do you guys know one way or the other? Because that could have some impact on gas tanks.
I was actually researching this most of the day to see what I could find. Apparently, the arena is open air. And I think the original claim that it doesn't have any air conditioning comes from an Ariel Helwani interview where he said it's going to be 98 degrees and people are going to be sweating. So I think people kind of put two and two together. I wasn't able to find, and if anybody could, definitely link me to it, but I wasn't able to find any actual claim that says there's no air conditioning. I think it's just the fact that it's an open-air arena, and Ariel said that in his ESPN interview. But if anybody knows anything else, please let me know. But I do think that that is kind of a concern that, you know, that it is going to be hot, and they could very well be sweating.
Yeah, I dislike the start time of this card, by the way, just because I have a kid and it's easy to do things at night when she's asleep. So I don't know how much of this card I'm actually going to be able to watch live. You know, I got family stuff. I'll have my phone, but it'll be what it is. I'll watch the replay for sure that night. But yeah, give me the typical start times, especially the fight night start times we're getting with it, where the main event start or the main card is starting at 8. That's been beautiful. But I digress. We are here to talk fights. Before we do that, we have another giveaway this week, guys. 1 year of a RotoWire premium subscription paid in full for the winner of a contest. I'm not going to tell you what that contest is right now. I'm going to need you to listen all the way to the main event. It is going to involve our main event and Twitter, which you need to be following all of us, I will say. So you can take care of that now if you're not already. I'm at the DF Sniper. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe is at Sun Tzu. I will say that RotoWire, of course, is the sponsor of this podcast. They put us on. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free. 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required, which you can win a 1-year subscription to via that contest I will mention later.
Can I just add real quick, that includes all of our DFS tools as well, which is important, I know, for a lot of you with football coming up. We already had the Thursday night game. This is over $100 value. It's easily our biggest giveaway in terms of monetary worth. So this is a big one, guys. Stay tuned for it.
So make sure you start thinking about the main event. We'll get to what that contest is. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe to this podcast on YouTube. Record Friday nights, usually 8 o'clock. I was a little bit late this week. It's one of the rare times it's been me, but it was me this week. But 8 o'clock Friday. Thanks to everybody in chat. Chat is going. Appreciate all you guys. You can also subscribe on iTunes, RotoWire MMA, and you can listen to the replay of that live broadcast after the fact. Enough of the pleasantries. Let's get to the fights. Don Madge, 8,700, taking on Fariz Ziam at 7,500. Madge is minus 165. The comeback on Ziam is plus 155. Let's see. Who do I want to start with this week? I kind of want Chris to go last in the main event, so that means I need him to go first here. So, Chris, you lead us off.
Well, yeah, Don Madge is very interesting. He's one of these guys that, at least for me, didn't look anything like he looked on tape in his fight against Tay Edwards. He looked way sharper, way better defensively, which really surprised me, and not that bad on the ground, at least. You know, had an active guard, had that arm bar that was pretty close against Tay Edwards. And I think the opponent here is just, you know, I just don't think he's that ready for this level yet. He's sort of a slow one-strike kickboxer who's going to give a lot of ground and let Don Madge work with his Thai boxing style and power. And I really think that's going to be enough here. I don't think the opponent here really has that much to threaten Madge with. And I'm big on him here. And one thing I really like about this fight is, a lot of times when we have a guy like this who nobody expected, and then he comes out and starches his opponent, we get something crazy like a 9,300 or a 9,500. Not that way with Madge's week. 87, I think you said, right, Sean?
8,700, yeah.
87 for Madge, which is very reasonable, and it's a matchup I really like him in. So I'm going to be really heavy on Madge this week.
I'm going to be heavy on Madge, but also I'm going to have a ton of this fight in general, because high inside the distance prop, and Madge is so aggressive. I think if he doesn't get a finish, he probably gets finished here. I like Madge as well. Joe, clean sweep.
Yes. Yeah, obviously. I mean, here's the issue, though. I mean, I think that Madge was initially faded purely based on where he fights out of. I mean, you know, everybody is thinking South Africa, Garrett McClellan, Ruan Potts. You know, if you looked a little deeper, the guy's got like 15,000 Muay Thai fights on top of MMA. He's super aggressive. I think the pendulum may have swung just a tad too far the other way. You know, this French guy, again, the French have a growing but small martial arts scene. I think this guy actually trains in like Bulgaria or something. Young, athletic, first UFC fight. I agree. This is something that Madge should win and win handily. I think he's going to be very popular, though. That's the only rub here. I do think that you should have exposure to this fight, but 8.7K at his price, with people looking at a potential early finish, he's going to be very highly owned. So, yes, I'm going to make it a clean sweep, but my caution is that he's going to be very highly owned, and I don't think there's any secret here, you know, in this fight.
What's messed up is I realize this is a 13-fight card instead of 12, so my whole alternating idea to get Chris to go last is totally screwed.
That's all right. You can let him go last anyway. As long as he's not picking Poirier, is he?
No, but I assume he's going to say something ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
Omari Akhmedov, 8,300, taking on Zach Cummins at 7,900. Akhmedov minus 115. Zach Cummins, this line was in danger of flipping. It has started to widen again. Cummins is now back in the plus money at plus 105. Personally, I like Akhmedov, but these are two big guys who don't strike a ton. Actually, a fight that I'm not super interested in. I think if anyone is more dangerous, I think Akhmedov is slightly more dangerous. The problem is the gas tank. I'll take him, though, in what I think is going to be a disappointing fight unless it ends in the first 90 seconds. Joe.
Yeah, so I'll take Cummins here. I mean, he's looked pretty decent at 185. Glory Hole MMA. He in Kansas City, anybody got that? Probably not. In any case, I'm going to go with Cummings. I do think the line still could potentially flip, which would create a small amount of odds value. I don't believe the ceiling is very high here. I mean, Cummings is fairly accomplished on the ground. I would not be totally surprised if he got a finish, although I see sort of a low scoring type of decision here with a small amount of odds value. So I am going to pick Cummings.
Chris.
When I first looked at this fight, I thought I was going to pick Akhmedov. I don't really think a lot of Cummings, and certainly not from a DFS perspective. But I think that, Joe, a lot of people are commenting in the chat about your joke there that nobody seemed to get. But I'm among them, by the way. But I think that Akhmedov, you know, he really just likes to come in and throw really wild hammers. And Cummings likes to slide back and counter. He's pretty good at it. He hit a much faster, much slicker striker in Tevin Giles with that counter and led to the beginning of the end of the fight. So I think that is going to be a really solid means for Cummings to win this fight here. I don't expect either man to get a ton of takedowns. I expect maybe that – have a lot of clinch work being done, maybe, exhaustive work in the clinch. But as long as they're in space, I like Cummings. And I think he can, what are we doing in the chat, guys? And as long as
it's the name Cummings, just that's all you need to know. And someone like,
I'm going to stay focused here, at least for the time being. But yeah, I'm basically finished. I like the countering ability of Cummings here. I think he's an accurate counter striker, and I think the wrestling is basically going to cancel. This is a pretty much dog or pass fight for me anyway. Sight unseen as far as DraftKings goes, just because Cummings is a tough guy to finish, but I actually think he's going to win the fight. So, bonus pick is that Cummings.
Nordine Taleb, 8200, as Joe viciously types away on his laptop. Nordine Taleb, 8200, picking on Muslim Salikov at 8,000. Odds on this fight, Taleb is -125. The comeback on Salikov is +115. I lean Taleb in this one. Close fight. Both are dangerous strikers. But I think Taleb has a kind of under-the-radar path to victory with his grappling should he choose to use it. So give me Taleb. Chris, who you got?
I'm going with Taleb too. I think the problem for Nordine Taleb in that Sean Strickland fight was that Strickland's pressure finally broke him. If you remember that fight, he had a fantastic first round. Then Strickland just got really aggressive with the pressure, really just closed him off, and was able to land a couple of hard strikes and knock him down. And once he did, that was pretty much it. I don't think that he's going to have that problem with Salikov, who is a slick striker in his own right, but doesn't really pressure, likes the counter, gives a lot of space. And I think that's going to, much like the fight with Don Madge, he's going to give Taleb a lot of time to work his kicking game, especially, which he's very good at. Salikov's offense is okay, but as I said, it's mostly counter heavy, and it relies a lot on like spinning back kicks and a lot of things that are low percentage and we don't really love to see from a DFS perspective. Now, he's obviously very powerful. He's obviously a very accurate counter striker, knocked out Ricky Rainey with one counter strike. I just like Taleb to sort of control the center of the octagon, get his work done, and take a pretty comfortable three-round decision here. So I'm going with Nordine Taleb.
Yeah, I'm with Chris on Taleb here.
And me. I picked Taleb.
And you, sorry. The issue here is with Muslim, the king of kung fu, is that as long as Taleb is smart and doesn't make a stupid mistake, he's not going to get caught with a spinning wheel kick. Which is one of the reasons why kung fu is typically not an art that translates all that well to MMA. Could it happen? Sure. I mean, Taleb is 37 years old. He's sort of on the back end of his career. One thing that we all sometimes make fun of TriStar, myself included, and one thing that TriStar does is they drill into you fundamentals. So I would not expect him to be surprised by something spinning or flying, which is really how I see, Muslim winning. I don't see him getting a conventional type of knockout. I don't see him winning the fight on the ground. And honestly, I think that you know, Tlaib is a bigger, better points fighter. So, you know, barring a finish by Tlaib, this could be a fairly low scoring fight, but at 8.2K, that's not going to be that bad. So I like Tlaib here. He's got some upside. I like his floor.
If he grapples, he could score a lot.
Yeah, he could. You know, he could if he decides to. A Muslim, I see, is more of a dart GPP type play.
Bilal Muhammad, 9,100, taking on Takashi Saito at 7,100. Muhammad is now at minus 355. The comeback on Saito is plus 320. Something I have to read off. I need to read off Bilal Muhammad DraftKings scores in his wins. You ready?
Yep.
82, 83, 82, 82, 82, 108.
Got to admire the consistency.
In the middle there, I wasn't like, there's nothing wrong with your with your connection. He scored 82 against Jordan Mean, against Brown and Tim Means. Like an 83 against Chance Rencounter. Like, and that is kind of how I see this fight go, which means in play and cash, probably not a huge ceiling. Bilal wins here. Saito's lone UFC win is a knockout over Ben Saunders. Sorry, not that impressed. Give me Bilal Muhammad to get it done. However, I mean, I think he's a little better everywhere, just well-rounded. He's not flashy. He's going to be that UFC grinding veteran, but he's a solid, solid fighter. So give me Bilal in this one. Just the price tag is a little higher than I want to see it. Who's up for this one? I believe Joe?
Yes. So other than Blades and Habib, Bilal would probably be my favorite fighter over 9K in cash.
We got to talk about Blades later. Like, we're going to get to that.
But I mean, I'm saying that other than those two, I certainly like him more than Pasmanov. I like him more than Makhachev. I like him more than the guy at 9.5K. But, you know, you pretty much stole the thunder, Sean. He's not exactly been GPP friendly. As great a guy as he is, as good a fighter as he is, unless he goes for takedowns, which we've seen him do on occasion, I don't see him scoring really that highly here. Now, it's possible he could get a few takedowns against Saito, which would sort of change the whole dynamics of the fight. But generally speaking, is if you're looking for a pretty safe floor in cash above 9K and can figure out how to put a lineup together that also includes Blades and Habib, then that would be the guy that I would take over the other three. So I'm on Muhammad here. I don't think he gets the finish. It's possible, but let's go with Muhammad and you know, consider using him in cash.
Chris.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I have to ask you something, Sean. I'm gonna broaden this out for a second. Didn't you pick Ben Saunders in that fight?
I did.
Wow. Okay, so
wait, I can explain this because look at the price tags in that fight.
I understand, but I'm just saying. So how could you not be impressed if you thought the other guy was gonna win?
Because Takashi Saito was 9,000. I like Ben Saunders as the one-off GPP play. And Ben Saunders, you know, in space, and Ben Saunders, if I remember right, the fight was close in the first round, and then his chin caught up to him. And I did say with the caveat, as long as Ben Saunders' chin holds up, and it didn't, and it hasn't, and he's done.
All right, so, I'm going to go back to me. Fair enough. Okay, I'm actually picking Saito here. I wasn't going to.
Wow.
This is another one where I fully went into it expecting to pick Bilal Muhammad. Saito gets hit a lot. His attributes include that he's very quick. He has a very strong, accurate piston left hand. Until I saw a fight with another guy who has a very quick and accurate piston left hand, and that's Jeff Neal. And he was hitting him with it all fight. And I can't help but think that similar kind of thing is going to happen again. Now, I don't mean to say that they're identical fighters. They're not. I think Jeff Neal is one of the better prospects that we've seen come into that division. I don't think Takashi Saito is there yet, but he's going to be the quicker fighter. I like that left hand. The wrestling game is a question mark. We have to see how he's going to deal with that. Bilal can go there. We've seen it. But I'm just not really that sure about how he's going to deal with the pressure and the big left hand. So yeah, I'm gonna throw a dart here. I am picking Takashi Saito for the win.
Dude, you tripping, Holmes? You be tripping for sure. Wow. Okay.
We'll get there. I have a dog pick coming up later.
Oh, I know what your dog pick is, but yeah, your dog pick has got a lot better shot than Saito.
Speaking of which, it looks like we've just arrived. Atman Azatar.
Wait, doesn't Joe has to pick, doesn't he?
Oh, no, he did below.
I did below, dude.
You did? I'm sorry.
I gave a whole dial. I will. Kudos to Chris for paying attention.
I know. I'm sorry, guys.
I was a little poll in chat.
Yeah. That's right. That's true. I was preoccupied. My apologies.
But... Let me get back to the intro here. Atman Azatar, 8,900, taking on Teemu Pakkalan at 7,300. Odds in this one, Azatar -210. Comeback on Pakkalan is +190. This did open at +225, so it's closed a little bit, not a ton. And here's my logic here. I will say that I want to spend GPPs a lot of both sides of this fight. Inside the distance is -225, so we should see a finish here. And I'm taking Pakkalan. We haven't seen him in 2 years since he got his, knocked out cold by Mark Diakese. He's a decent, well-rounded fighter. Like, time off, people tend to avoid those guys. Ring rust and chin are the two concerns. Azatar is young, he's raw, and he's super aggressive. And I think a guy like Pakkalan will be able to counter him. I think the takedown game is possible for Pakkalan. He has a few different paths to victory. And I think this fight scores well just because of the style Azatar brings to it. So I like both sides of this fight in GPP. I do think Azatar is going to be a little popular with the -210 line. -220 does not go to decision line in the fight. But my leverage here is that I'm going to be overweight to Pakkalan, and I'm going to take the shot here and pick him to win the fight straight up. So give me Teemu Pakkalan, and let's go to the underdog whisperer, as he liked to think he is. So after your underdog playing Takashi Saito fails, will mine come through, Chris?
Well, I hope both of ours comes through, because I am also picking Teemu Pakkalan. It's strange about Pakkalan, because we don't know a ton about him. He's had three fights in the octagon. The first one, he came in on 9 days' notice. He shot for a bunch of bad takedowns, and he gassed out pretty quickly. Second one, he won very quickly. Third one, of course, as you mentioned, he lost very quickly. So, it's hard to know a ton about him from those three fights. And if you want to go before that, we're going years back. But what I do see from him is some sharp, accurate striking, particularly counterpunching, some very decent grappling and positional awareness. And the opponent here is just, I just didn't like what I saw. He just basically throws a bunch of big bombs and tries to knock you out. And in not his last fight, but the one before that, he got his back taken. He got taken down a lot. He ended up winning, landing a gut kick to the opponent that shut him down, and that was the end of the fight. But I really think Pakkalan is going to have a lot of opportunities, especially for reactive takedowns. I think he can wear his big muscle bound opponent out, and I think he gets the win here, and I think this can be a very, very high point scoring, takedown laden win. Can he get knocked out? Of course he can. As I said, his opponent's going to throw from his hip and tries to knock him out. So have both sides. I would be stronger on Pakkalan, though. I'm not that concerned about the knockout. I think that Pakkalan is the better fighter. I think he's the guy's got the better game plan in there, and I think he's going in for the win. So book it, Teemu Pakkalan.
I will say, somebody mentioned, Pakkalan also has a large height and reach advantage in this matchup. So people are wondering about the odds. It's because we just saw Teemu Pakkalan knocked out cold 2 years ago. Like Mark Diakese, that was an ugly knockout. So that's why the odds are the way they are. Joe, are we going to go sweep on the underdog?
Yeah, this is really weird, because I looked into this fight a little bit, and I actually watched some film on Ottoman. There's a bit of a narrative and a backstory on this Ottoman guy. So apparently he's pretty well off. He's got close ties to the royal family in Morocco. He's got a brother that's also a fighter. He's doing this for glory, not money, which always worries me a little bit. I like these hungry fighters that, are fighting for money. He is a wildly aggressive fighter in watching some of his fights. The reason to like Pakulin here is because he gets hurt a fair amount. Now, he bounces back and he's just wildly aggressive and he goes out there swinging. Pakulin is by far the more disciplined and technical fighter here. Ottoman deals with adversity through pure aggression. And I think that could actually cost him here. This is a good fight to target, though, because would it surprise me if Ottoman, you know, all pumped up, you know, having the Moroccan government behind him, you know, just bum rushes him and just finishes him? No, which is why I think you have to have some shares of this fight. However, if this plays out, if this gets be outside of the first round, I think Pakulin's got a really good shot here. So I'm going to actually continue, oddly enough, the sweep here. And three of us are on a 7.2K dog, which is really odd on a card where there are so few dogs. But yeah, I will go with I'll go with Pakulin as well.
So we get one of the more interesting fights to talk about in the last one. To God, I want to skip this one. Liana Jojua, 8,400, taking on Sarah Moras at 7,800. Jojua -150, the comeback on Moras +140. Both girls typically rely on BJJ. Moras is 5-6, but has fought some good competition. Jojua, the newcomer, neither one striking is very good. I actually think Moras might be a slightly better striker, but Jojua is better on the ground. Fight goes to decision, -205. Like, I have a hard time getting a read on this fight because I know Moras is bad. And from what I've seen, I think Jojua is pretty bad too. So right now, my plan's to stay away from this fight mostly. Joe, sway me otherwise.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I don't know that there's too many fights we can stay away from, especially in the mid-range. The joke is getting old, but it looks like, you know, Sour Cheesecake Moras missed weight by several pounds.
2 pounds, yep.
Yeah, she's the only fighter who missed weight. She is, oddly enough, fighting in Dubai a week before a Canada card, which I don't know if the UFC is trying to tell her something like, hey, well, we're giving you a trip to Dubai, but we expect you to lose. And she misses weight. I'm not putting much into the missing weight because she was actually told to stop cutting by the medical staff in Dubai. So I don't think that that's going to be a factor. You know, our good friend Brett Apley said there's a 99.99% chance that this fight ends in an armbar. You know, but I think, unfortunately, I do think that this is a fight that's going to require you to target. And I don't know if you pick a side or, you know, just spread. I am going to go with the more experienced fighter here, who's Sarah Moras. I'm not going to buy into my own narrative. I mean, I am suspicious that the UFC is flying her to Dubai the week before a Canada card, but I think she is the more experienced fighter. I think she has a better ground game. She's not afraid to, God, this is going to sound bad. She's not afraid to be on her back. So I am going to look, it's not a confident pick by any means. And I certainly would not get near this fight in cash, but I think I'm going to go with Moras here.
Chris.
Yeah. So I'm not a big fan of Moras by any means. Like, how could you be at this point? But when I saw tape on Jojua, my first thought was Moras has got to be able to do this, right? I mean, Jojua is just as far as striking goes, she basically has nothing. She just has sort of like a lazy 1-2 that she doesn't even commit to. And I disagree with Sean a little bit. I think that Moras is going to be able to out-scramble her. Look, the only person we've really seen out-scramble Moras is Chiasan, who is so much bigger. And, I mean, I don't even really count that in this instance. She's going to have a fighter who she might be even a little bigger than. Maybe they're about the same size. But we've seen Moras scramble her ass off in the octagon to an armbar finish in one of her previous fights, and I think in her last win, which may have been 2 or 3 fights ago at this point. But yeah, I just saw in tape Jojua just, I mean, she scrambles as well and she ends up on top at certain points, but she puts herself into a lot of bad positions as well. And I just think, to Joe's point, to the more seasoned fighter, the fighter who's going to know how to move around in there and you know, not be overwhelmed by the moment, et cetera, et cetera. I just feel like Moraes is gonna have a handle on this here. I think that this is such a winnable fight for her. If she doesn't win it, I mean, she's earned her pink slip, that's for sure. But I do think that she is going to win it here. I think it probably ends in a submission, maybe by that guard armbar that Brett predicted. But I am going on that specific prediction, maybe not as specific, but I am going to say Moraes by submission.
Wow. I can't believe two guys just picked Sarah Moraes. I mean, I get it, but got it.
Well, according to our good friend Non, Moraes could only beat vegans, which I kind of like. So it's kind of funny.
All right, moving on. Zybora Tukhugov, 9,500, taking on Lerone Murphy at 6,700. Tukhugov, -325. Comeback on Lerone Murphy, +295. Look, Tukhugov is too expensive for me this card. Just, we have Habib up there, Makhachev, other guys we're going to talk about. Typically doesn't score high, burst fighter. I think he's going to try and stand up. And Lerone Murphy, decent rangy striker. It's a weird spot for him to make his debut. I don't think Tukhugov will steamroll him on the feet. I mean, he has power, could catch him, but I think Murphy can hang in there on the feet. I think eventually Tukhugov is going to have to go to the ground. I don't think he does it quickly. And either way, he's got to score to get 12x, you know, 110 points. I just don't see it here. I think Murphy's actually a live dog. Tukhugov, not very smart. Do think he is a more powerful striker. I think his style good on the judges' scorecards, whereas Murphy will use more of his movement. And again, I think the takedown eventually will be enough to steal Tukhugov's round. So Tukhugov, the pick, but I think Murphy's a better DK play and that he's live, and I don't mind him as a super punt on DraftKings. Joe, start us off.
Okay, so I got a bit of narrative on this. I was off this week, so I did a bit more tape study than I might usually do. So I watched several of this guy's Murphy's fights in the UK promotion that he fought in. And look, he's athletic, he's aggressive, he's got speed. He will have a 5-inch reach advantage over Tuk Tuk. So I immediately reached out to one of my sources of European and English fighters and said, you know, I watched some tape on this guy. He looks pretty decent. You know, what do you think? And he came back to me and he said, look, I think this guy will win some fights in the UFC. However, he has no takedown defense. So if Tuk Tuk decides to employ wrestling here, which he could very well do, he could get him down. Now, if this turns into a range fight, I could certainly see Murphy perhaps winning a close decision. One of the knocks on Tuk Tuk, and let's also add to the narrative, we have not seen Tuk Tuk fight in 3 years. Now, two of those 3 years were a USADA suspension. When he fought 3 years ago, he lost a split decision to Renato Moicano in Brazil. I was on Moicano in that fight. That might have been his first or second fight in the UFC. The other piece of narrative is in the time that Tuk Tuk has been out, Murphy has fought 7 times. Now, that would concern me in a lot of cases. However,
I mean, he kind of fought.
Well, yeah, he kind of fought. We're talking about the McGregor melee, the 35-day suspension. That would bother me, except Tuk Tuk, as Sean kind of gave me the lead here, is part of Khabib's entourage. He's been training at AKA. Looks pretty bricked up in his photos. I've not seen the ceremonial weigh-ins yet. Is trained and managed by Khabib's dad. I don't know. I mean, also the other part of the narrative here is Murphy does, as you can tell, he's a pretty tall fighter. He cuts a fair amount of weight. And this was a relatively short notice fight. So because of all that narrative, I'm not as high as Murphy as I was after watching his film. I will have some shares. I'm going to pick Tuk Tuk to win, which, yeah, okay, bow. Joe's picking a 9.5K fighter. But
I picked him too. Same thing as you. I feel great about it.
Yeah, I am picking him to win. But I do agree that I don't think he's going to be a great DraftKings play. He doesn't have a lot of volume. You know, he's going to have to get a finish relatively early to earn his salary. So I do think that Murphy is worth a few stabs at 6.7K. That opens up your lineups to do a lot. I don't like this fight at all in cash. I see this as purely a GPP fight. You know, and let's add that a 24-year-old Tuk-Tuk got a split decision win over a male nurse. So let's throw that into the fray. He's bound to improve. He's only 28 now. So I see this as a GPP fight. Wouldn't play it in cash. I'm going to pick Tuk-Tuk, but I don't think he's a great DraftKings play.
Chris?
Okay, thank you. I don't have to hear Joe say Tuk-Tuk anymore, so that's good.
Do you know what a Tuk-Tuk is?
Huh?
Do you know what a Tuk-Tuk is?
No, what is
it? Okay, so a Tuk-Tuk is a method of transportation in Thailand. It's one of those, like, three-wheeled scooters that, you know, it's like kind of an open-air taxi that they have in Thailand, so Tuk-Tuk.
Fair enough. Well, I learned something today. And what you guys are going to learn is why Murphy is going to win this fight.
Wow.
Holy crap.
First of all, you like that segue, though. I know you did. But when I looked at – I said it in the chat earlier. I looked at the pricing. I honestly thought it was a misprint. I had to look again. I can't for the life of me understand why Tukhugov would be 9,400. The point at the wrestling is taken, but he doesn't look to wrestle all that much.
9,500.
Well, yeah, there you go, 9,500. He doesn't look to wrestle all that much. But basically, what he does is just try to stand on the outside and come in with these big winging shots and try to knock you out. And I think the opponent, as Joe said, he's quick. He's got good in and out movement. He seems powerful. And also, what Joe didn't mention is he's got offensive wrestling of his own, which I think is an interesting little wrinkle. I can't comment on his lack of takedown defense. I watched three of his fights. I didn't really see it as an issue, but I will take the source's word for it. But I can only go by what I see personally. I haven't seen his takedown defense be that much of an issue. Plus the fact that Tukhugov doesn't seem to use his wrestling that often, so I am not that concerned about it. I like the reach. I like the speed. I like the power. I like the fact that Tukhugov is way too comfortable fighting a range kickboxing match when he shouldn't be. And for all those reasons, and for 6,700, of course, I am going to take Murphy to get this done.
All right, moving on. Andrea KGB Lee, 8,800, taking on Joanne Calderwood at 7,400. Odds on this fight. Sorry, guys, I got to scroll for a second. I was looking up odds for something later and screwed myself here. Andrea Lee's minus 220. Comeback on Calderwood is plus 200. So while I'm picking Andrea Lee to win this fight, the odds are pretty off in my opinion. And I am... Calderwood's the more attractive DraftKings play. I think this is a really close fight. I think she should have won the fight last time out against Caitlin Chookagian, beat Ariane Lipsky. Look, close on the feet. I like JoJo's progression here. Andrea Lee, she's really just priced out. I actually think it's going to be a decent volume fight on both sides, and the winner's going to score 80 to 90-ish. The problem is if Lee does that, kind of ho-hum. If Calderwood does that, she's going to be in the optimal lineup. So I'm picking Lee in a razor close fight. I think I'm going to have I'll be overweight on Joanne Calderwood. Chris.
So I was watching some of her previous fights, and I was trying to figure out what I don't like about Joanne Calderwood. And I think the Chookagian fight really drove it home, which is, she's just way too stationary with that Muay Thai style. It allowed Chookagian so often to just land her combinations and get out of the pocket. And I think that's what gave judges that impression that she was doing the cleaner work. Because it's not that Calderwood didn't get some good work done in that fight. She did, particularly with the leg kicks. But I just feel like she's too stationary. And when her target's not, it allows them to really put their shots together and get out of harm's way. That's particularly true with Andrea Lee, and particularly more worrisome if you're Calderwood or if you're a Calderwood backer, because Andrea Lee has more power. She throws in combination. I would say, I mean, I guess you could say Chookagian does that as well, but I would say the punches that Andrea Lee are going to throw are going to have more snap to them They're going to look to do more damage. And we have a pressure fighter here who's maybe not as quick as Calderwood, but can also move in and out some. And I just don't like Calderwood, unless she lands like a perfect shot. I mean, leg kicks are nice, but, you know, leg kicks don't finish fights. They have to be most of the time. I mean, they have to be a means to an end. And for Calderwood, I just don't see it. I just don't see the progression in her striking. Really, I like that she added her wrestling a little bit. That could be something here, but we've seen Andrea Lee be very strong in clinch situations and good at reversals and stuff like that. So I actually think this is a pretty nice spot for Lee, and I like her to take a high-volume decision.
Yeah, okay. So there's a little bit of narrative around this fight, and for those of you that also saw Alpha, I'm going to repeat pretty much everything I said there because I think it's important. So I think KGB is going to win this fight as well. However, when KGB accepted this fight, she had not planned on fighting again anytime soon. So she had a vacation that she decided not to cancel. And her vacation was in Hawaii. So her camp is very disjointed. Now, she did train with Rachel Ostovich. In Hawaii. And I, the same offer I made on Alpha is if anybody can get me some of that training film with KGB and Rachel Ostovich rolling, I will give my cash lineup away for a future card. But her camp was a bit disjointed. I do like her to win. JoJo got chooked, which is now an MMA term. You could look it up, Google it. She got chooked in that fight. I think the reason why she might have lost that fight is because she goofed off in the last 30 seconds or so of the third round. It was a very close fight. Chukagian seems to have a lot of those types of fights. I do think that JoJo has a pretty solid floor, is going to be very popular, especially in cash. I do think, though, that KGB wins this fight. She's stronger. You know, she's more technical. She's got better head movement. She's got a ground game if she chooses to use it. I think she could be a sneaky GPP play, but she can also, you know, get you 80 or so points, which is not going to move the needle all that much, you know, in GPPs. But I will pick KGB to win, but I do agree with Sean that I think JoJo could be a decent play in and perhaps even with a loss, if all the favorites otherwise win, might have the best floor. You know, even better perhaps than Dustin, and could find her way onto the optimal lineup that way. So I think she'll be somewhat popular in GPPs as well. But give me KGB for the win.
All right, Marabek Taisimov, 9,000, taking on Diego Ferreira at 7,200. Taisimov minus 265. Comeback on Ferreira is plus 245. Interesting fight. Now, Ferreira is usually super aggressive. When you do that against Taisimov, he makes you unconscious. Ferreira, you know, wants to hit this fight to the ground. Taisimov, really good takedown defense, has that background in wrestling, that we don't really see because he just knocks people out. We don't see Taisimov very often because of visa issues. This is his once-a-year fight. Give me Taisimov in this one, but Fajita, a live dog I'm looking at as well, and a good GPP fight. Joe, what do you have?
Yeah, well, this is interesting because, first of all, I would not get near this fight in cash. Taisimov is a very low-output striker. He is pretty much a knockout or bust kind of guy. He did not have a great fight against Green in his last fight. Aside from visa issues, I think there might have been, although I'm perfectly happy to be stood corrected, there might have been some USADA issues as well. He's 31 years old. You know, I would still put him in his prime. Fast hands, clean puncher. He's just not very high output. So if he's kept at range, which again, I don't think CDF is going to do, but CDF could certainly, try to get it to the ground, which is he's a third degree Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. So I think this is kind of an interesting fight. I mean, I don't like Taisimov either in cash or as one of my better plays in the 9K plus range. However, he certainly has upside in GPPs. I just see him as a guy with a bigger ceiling than a floor. And I think, you know, CDF on the other side is probably going to be popular. He's 7.2K. You know, the hope's going to be that he could get the fight to the ground. But I see him as a GPP dart, you know. So I think if this fight goes to decision, it's going to be a nightmare from a scoring perspective. I will take Tazminov to get the win, but, you know, tread carefully.
Chris.
Yeah. One thing I noticed, I think you called it, Sean, that Fahey is aggressive, and that's going to be a problem against Tazminov. Specifically, I think that if you watch Fahey's fights, like, he has a tendency to just sort of plant his feet and try to brawl in the pocket. And I think Tazminov is going to wipe him out the second that happens. This is a rare fight where, I don't often say the exact way that I think a fight is going to finish. But this time, I think I have it. I think that they're going to get Faye is going to try to keep distance early. They're going to get into a brawl where Faye is going to plant his feet, and he's just going to get melted with a counter, as we saw Hadzovic get melted, as we saw other guys that whose names escape me now, at least one more get melted with counters. I just think that, yes, he can be low output, but he's also very good at, like, baiting you into throwing strikes, using leg kicks, using that jab. I think he's going to get the kind of fight he wants, and I think it's going to end in a knockout. So I'm pretty big on Tazminov here.
All right, moving on. We have Curtis Blaydes at 9,400 taking on Shamil Abdurakhimov at 6,800. Blaydes minus 475. The comeback on Shamil Abdurakhimov is plus 420. Blaydes look to wrestle if Abdurakhimov, you know, Abdurakhimov has decent takedown defense, but I think Blaydes another level of wrestler. The issue is if Shamil can keep this on the feet. It's a really close fight. 6,800 heavyweights. I actually like this fight for GPPs. I don't think it'll become a boring fight because I think Blaydes is going to push the takedowns and either get them and score a lot, and that's most likely what's going to happen. Or Shamil, even if he has a Shamil-type win at 6,800, or, yeah, 6,800, if he pulls it off, he's going to be on the optimal. I like Curtis Blaydes a lot, just on the off chance Shamil can keep it upright. I think he wins. The issue is when you're building, can you fit in Curtis Blaydes? He must play. You know, Shamil has looked good as of late. He's on three straight wins, Marcin Tybura being the most recent. I think that's a pretty good win. That being said, give me Curtis Blaydes, who somebody mentioned it, and I can't remember who it was offhand. His wins are against an over-the-hill Mark Hunt. You could say an over-the-hill Alistair Overeem, although I think that one's a bit of a stretch. I think Overeem's still pretty good. Knocked out by Ngannou. Justin Willis. Is Justin Willis really good? He only scored 88 points in that one. Adam Milstead, Cody East, they're terrible. And he's going to win over Daniel Omelianchuk, where he only scored 66 points. Like, I had a little bit of hesitation about Blaydes for that reason. Shamil, if he wins this fight, outside of Overeem is close because Overeem, you never know what you're going to get out of him. As impressive as that was, Shamil's up there. It's easily will be a top two win for Curtis Blaydes, and it's only Shamil Abdurakhimov. So I think I'm going to play Blaydes in cash just because of the other options up there, but I'm a little bit hesitant, even with the wrestling heavy game plan. I do think he wins, though, and actually, the reasons I mentioned, do like this fight overall for GPPs. Chris.
So I hear you, and I was thinking a little bit of that myself, but then it hit me that Abdurakhimov is a much smaller heavyweight, and he's just not going to be able to keep it on the feet. Even if technically he would be a better wrestler, it wouldn't even matter because Blaydes is just going to be able to beast him down whenever he wants. Now there is still a matter of scoring because he was able to beast Justin Willis down basically whenever he wanted, and didn't score well in that fight. I don't know which one we're going to get here. I think that I would venture to guess that we get the worst of the guy who's going to land ground and pound. I don't know why I think that. Maybe it's because in the Justin Willis fight, he really wanted that victory and he was overcautious. Now, that's just me speculating, of course, and I would never say anything else. But I would tend to think that we get the guy who does ground and pound with those takedowns, rinse and repeat. And I think he's going to be able to get him. Now, if he could keep it on the feet, that is Abdurakhimov, could he get something done? Maybe. I mean, he's a good counter striker. He's got a decent jab. And despite the fact that I actually think we saw improvements in Blades' striking in that last fight against Justin Willis, I still don't think it's great. I still think he misses his range a lot, which is bad news against a decent counterpuncher. But like I said, the wrestling is going to be too much here. It's going to be overwhelming. I mean, unless he absolutely cracks Blades early, and even if he does that, we saw Mark Hunt do that, and then he couldn't win. So I really have a hard time picking Abdurakhimov with the size disparity. I think Blades is gonna get a pretty dominant win here. If you're afraid of the scoring, which I don't think is completely a baseless fear, you could get away from him in GPPs, but I don't think you can in cash. I think he's pretty much a lock there. So I'm going with Blades for the big win.
Wow, Chris hitting us up with his grammarian. Wow, baseless. Okay, so Blades is now the biggest favorite on the card at minus 500. He also has the best inside the distance odds on the card. I like him here a fair amount, a lot, actually. I do see rinse and repeat takedowns here. He's more athletic, has a speed and size advantage. I think his opponent is more in the gatekeeper role. I would have liked to have seen a better matchup. I'm pretty much always going to back Blades against anybody other than, Francis Ngannou and perhaps Stipe. I really do like Blades a lot here. I would love to see Blades-Stipe. I just don't necessarily see that as a money fight for Stipe. But I think Blades, you know, I would have liked to have seen him have a better opponent so he could get the co-main. But I'm with Blades here. I think the challenge is going to be how to create a lineup without two losses that includes both Blades and Khabib. I think that's going to be the hard part here.
Not for me.
Okay, well, yeah. You're the man, Chris. What can I say? And you're a grammarian to boot.
Even if you're picking Paclin, that's not a cash play.
Yeah, you're a grammarian to boot, dude. Okay, so Blades.
We're gonna go a little over now. We only got 10 minutes here, so let's not try to argue too much as we talk about Islam Makhachev at 9,200, taking on Davy Hamosh at 7,000. Odds on this one. Makhachev -355, Hamosh +320. I am going out on a limb here, and then I think Hamosh is going to be a little popular, and I'm going to fade Davy Hamosh. I know Davy Hamosh. Hear my thinking here is that, look, he is a wizard on the ground. Makhachev, you know, everyone's worried this is going to be a stand-up fight. On the feet, though, Hamosh is super aggressive, and Makhachev is in danger there. I think Makhachev is going to say, screw it, go with his grappling. And I think he can avoid a submission. And relying on submissions in MMA makes me nervous. And then I see how popular Hamosh is going to be. I'm looking for leverage wherever I can get it. I think that's one of the spots I'm going to go here. I'm going to take some dart throws on Lerone Murphy, a couple dart throws on Shamil, and kind of spread out that Hamosh ownership to these other dart throws, just because I think Makhachev is that good. I know if we saw Makhachev last time out against, he was the one who fought Sarukian. Different fight in that Hamosh wants to be on the ground here, and he's going to be accepting position, looking for submissions. And I don't think Makhachev allows it to happen. I think he wins. My leverage is fading Hamosh. I do like Makhachev. It's a little dicey for cash, I will admit, but that's how I see this fight. Joe.
Yeah, okay. So what could happen here is Islam Makhachev can put himself in line to be an heir apparent to Khabib, managed and trained by Khabib's dad. But what is more likely to happen is a ugly, messy stand-up fight that's low scoring, because you have two fighters that are going to be relying on their ancillary skills, in this case striking, because one is a chain wrestler and the other is a submission specialist. So that's going to be interesting. I do think that Islam has the cardio advantage, so I can see him getting stronger as the fight progresses, which is why I'm going to pick Islam. But this is a very, very difficult fight to target. You know, I think I might like him a little more in cash than Tasmanov, but I don't love him as a GPP play. Even if he gets a late finish, it could be a really low scoring type of fight. And again, you've got a chain wrestler against a submission grappler. So what does that mean? A striking affair, relatively low scoring. So, and let's not forget that Makhachev has had his chin tested by Martins. So I'm going to go with Makhachev. Again, I just think that this is a Russian card here, and we're going to see a lot of Russians, and it's kind of hard to go against, you know, the Khabib entourage fighters. So I'll go with Islam, but I do not think this is necessarily that great a fight for DK.
Chris?
Yeah, the cardio is a big one for me. I was kind of going back and forth in this fight because if it does end up just staying on the feet, as Joe said, which is certainly a possibility. We have a guy in Hamosh who's not a great striker, but he's a willing one and he's an aggressive one. The thing is for me is that we've seen Hamosh fade before down the stretch, and I really just think that Makhachev is going to be just so strong on top when he gets there. Even if they just stall out a little bit in clinch positions, I think that's going to attrit the gas tank. And I really just feel like that's the path to victory here is a slowed down Hamosh, and then the takedowns come easier in rounds 2 and 3. I get the dart throw on Hamosh. He's going to come out and throw some hammers. But Makhachev, I was going to say he's never been taken out, but I think he was credited. I think they credited Sarukian with one takedown in that fight. But even then, it was only like for a second, and then he got back up. So I don't think he's going to have much joy in takedowns, obviously. Now, he's obviously going to look for sweeps if Makhachev gets him on the ground, but I just think he's too big and too good at positional control to allow that to happen, even against someone as accomplished as a jiu-jitsu player as Hamosh is. So I'm going to take Makhachev here. I do fear that it could be low scoring, but if Hamosh gets tired ahead of schedule, like if they do a lot of grappling in round one and the takedowns come a little easier, then you might get a little bit more points than you expect. So I wouldn't say write off Makhachev completely, but I understand concerns that it might be low scoring, but he's my pick to win it.
Moving on, we have the co-main event, Edson Barbosa, 8,500, taking on Paul the Irish Dragon Felder at 7,700. Barbosa, the favorite, minus 140. Comeback on Felder is plus 130. This is the fight that I don't think is great for DraftKings. We saw a technical striking match before. Yes, they both have power, but I think it plays out the same way. If anyone is going to land the big knockout strike, it'll be Barbosa. Close fight, though. Obviously, Barbosa getting older, has lost a few, but the great competition. Felder, I think, solid, a little bit underrated. I think Barbosa ultimately wins this one, but you'd be surprised if Barbosa, I'm not going to read his scores because of time, but doesn't usually score a ton of points, you know, Dan Hooker excluded. He's not a big scorer. So give me Barbosa for the win, but a kind of a fight I'm going to be underweight on. Chris for this one.
Yeah, it's a close one for me. The reason why I'm taking Felder is because I just feel like Barbosa has become way too easy to beat if you just pressure him. Now, Felder doesn't have the crazy pressure that a guy like Khabib or Tony Ferguson does, but he does have, like, I would call it educated, just like constant pressure where he takes the center and slowly moves you back. And I think that while throwing combinations, he'll throw it. He's very good at mixing in stuff like spinning elbows, and he's good at knowing the right time to throw those kind of strikes. And I really just feel like that educated pressure is going to take its toll. And he might be able to walk Barbosa on to a couple of big shots here. But, you know, even if it is a decision, you know, Felder could still work in cash games, could even work in GPPs depending on how high scoring we get, although maybe not. But I like Felder at least for cash. I think that, as you said, Barboza may have lost a step. I think that, you know, it's getting easier to draw up a game plan to beat him. You know, we almost saw Beneil Dariush do it. No disrespect, but I mean, they're not generally considered the same type of fighter, same class of fighter is what I mean. But I do think Felder is a decent shot here on DK, and I like him to win the fight.
Joe.
Okay, so this will be Paul Felder's last fight in the UFC. I predict.
Where's he going after he wins?
He's
going
to be a full-time commentator. He's had issues with you know, lungs. He's had a lot of damage accumulated over the course of his career. He's also fought vastly inferior competition than Edson Barboza has since their first fight. We don't have to name the who's who of persons that Barboza has fought. I believe he made a camp change, which really showed itself. Now, there is some narrative around his last fight with Gaethje. I was at that fight. I'm not sure Sean and Chris. Actually, Sean could probably relate to this. Chris can't. I don't know how you would react if you were heading into the ring and got a tap on your shoulder, someone telling you your wife's in labor. I think that might mess you up a bit as you're heading into the ring for a fight.
Well, they'd be saying ex-wife, because if I had a fight scheduled for any time near when she was going to give birth, I'd be getting divorced.
Touche. So anyway, I'm going to give him a bit of a pass. And we all know how Gaethje is. It hits hard. Now, Barboza, I know MMA math doesn't work a lot, and that's one of the things I really love about the sport. It's the fact that MMA math doesn't work. However, I'm going to use MMA math as one of my many reasons why I think Barboza wins this fight. If I was going to line Dan Hooker up against Felder, I would pick Hooker 9 times out of 10. And we all saw what Barboza did to Felder. It was almost like he was taking, you know, like, okay, you're finally giving me someone who's only, you know, in the top 15 and not in the top 10 to fight. I love Felder. I think his IQ has gotten a lot better. There was always Paul Felder jokes about his fight IQ. I think he's gotten a lot better. I absolutely love him as an announcer. I think he's one of the best color guys that the UFC has. So he can make money doing that. I don't ever see him fighting for a title. So I'm going to go Edson Barboza here. I do agree that this might not be the best fight for DraftKings, especially if it goes to decision. However, I could certainly see Barboza with his kicks, and I don't think he's lost the step that you guys think he has. I could certainly see him hurting Felder with his kicks and getting a later stop. And at 8.5K, I could see him as a sneaky mid-range kind of GPP play that's going to be relatively low-owned. So give me Barboza for all those reasons, and I'm going to go out and predict that this is Felder's last fight in the UFC.
All right, moving on to the main event. Habib the Eagle Nurmagomedov, 9,300, taking on Dustin Poirier at 6,900. Habib minus 400, comeback on Poirier plus 355. Look, Habib should get takedowns.
Wait, I'm sorry, Sean. Time out before we do that. Contest.
All right, hang on. Let me, because I'm in the middle of it. I'll power through mine because it's quick. Habib should get rinse and repeat takedowns. Should win this fight. I'm rooting for Poirier. Poirier's path to victory is catching Habib coming in early. And I mean, in the first 2 minutes of the fight, I think once he defends a takedown or two, or gets taken down once or twice, it's going to be a problem. I don't think he's going to stop takedowns. Habib in this one, all in on this fight on both sides. Now to the part you're all waiting for, to win a 1 year premium membership to RotoWire. Tell us how many takedowns Habib Nurmagomedov is going to have in this fight, and as a tiebreaker, if more than one person guesses the right amount of takedowns Habib lands, give us the result of the fight, give us who wins, how they win, and if you pick decision, I want scorecards. That's just as a tiebreaker. So the contest is, how many takedowns does Habib have? Also, as a tiebreaker, who wins the fight, how do they win? Submission, knockout, and a round. And if you pick decision, what are the scorecards? Make sure you're following all of us on Twitter at the DF Sniper, at Real Chris Olsen, at Sun Tzu. Use the hashtag #FightIQ so we can find those tweets. Good luck in winning a 1-year membership to RotoWire. Now that we've said that, let's go to the breakdown for this fight. Joe, who do you have?
I'm very high on Khabib in this fight. I think it's a really good matchup for him, quite honestly. I get the narrative. Everybody is looking at how big and what a big size advantage Poirier had and how he wore down Max. Max coming up from featherweight to take his first fight at 155. I get it. And I like Dustin. He is a great guy. He's done a lot for the community. He's a great fighter. Again, this is a guy that was put to sleep by Michael Johnson, though. Let's not forget that. Khabib has been a DraftKings. What's titanium? What's better than platinum? He's been titanium on DraftKings in terms of a point scored. There you go. Even in a decision, with his ability to get rinse and repeat takedowns, he's going to score well. 9.3K is a gift. I love Khabib here. I would not fault anyone for wanting to take a stab at Poirier at 6.9K. However, I also do not believe that Khabib has got that many more fights left in him. He's already gone on the record and say he gives crap all about legacy. He is interested in money fights. He's going to make, from what I hear, $5 million for this fight, which is huge. So he's not a guy, he's a guy that can pick and choose. So I don't think he has a lot of fights. I see him winning this one in a pretty dominant fashion. I don't know that he'll get a finish. If he does, it'll occur late. But I like Khabib a pretty fair amount here. I also think he's going to be the highest owned fighter on the card.
Chris.
Yeah. I don't hate people picking Poirier here. I think the reason people are picking him is the same reason that I picked him against Max, which is a power puncher who throws in volume. And that's a very interesting thing and a very nice skill set to have in any fight. But the reason why I think Khabib wins this is because, and I haven't seen a lot of people mention it, but maybe because it hasn't affected him adversely yet. But look, Dustin gets tired. He got tired against Max. He got tired against Gaethje. Now, to his absolute credit, he pulled through both of those fights. But there wasn't a lot of grappling involved in those. Certainly there wasn't any grappling where he would have to be on the bottom and have to be carrying somebody's weight and dealing with strikes and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's going to work to drain the gas tank way quicker. And I think that, like, if there's wrestling involved and Dustin is even more tired, then maybe those blitzes from Max in the second and third round, maybe they do end up getting finishes instead of Dustin, having to come and rally through. So I really think that's going to be a big factor. I don't think that the takedowns are going to be a problem. The only people we've seen stop Khabib's takedowns are bricked up guys who are wrestlers themselves, guys like Gleison Tibau, and Dustin Poirier is not that. So I don't worry about Khabib landing takedowns here. I think that unless Dustin can really pour it on him early, I think Khabib wins it, and I think he wins it pretty comfortably. So I'm with Joe here. I'm going Khabib.
Bricked up and juiced.
Well, yeah, exactly. Very, very good.
All right, guys, time for some hot takes. Viewer hot takes, please, in chat. Hit them up. Let's see what we got here. Guys, anybody have a hot take ready for UFC 242?
Yeah, my hot take is that a fighter with a loss will be on the optimal.
Oh, that's a good one.
That makes me feel good about the amount of Calderwood I have.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That's what that makes me feel good about. Yeah. Chris, you got one?
Oh, yes, I have one. Takashi Sato is going to knock out Bilal Muhammad.
Wow.
That's.
I got to play a few Sato lineups now.
That is pretty bold. I'm going to say from my hot take, actually, anybody got one in chat? Let me check real quick. I got two. I like two off the bat. Tyler Lee, zero takedowns by Khabib, stands and bangs, and the fight ends in the first two rounds.
Wow.
I think crazy.
That would be a hot take.
Geronimo 713, Dustin Poirier shocks the world. Not sure if he wins, but will with his takedown defense.
Wow. He could shock the world by having his bowels give way in the ring. I mean, that would shock the world.
Last one, Ryan Burton Morris inside the distance. My hot take is going to be, Joe kind of stole the thunder with what I was thinking.
And we did not talk about this before, right?
Nope.
Yep.
We did not, but I'm getting those feelings too, even though I'm taking some shots and some dogs here. All right. Can I just say Timo Pakkilin wins inside the first 90 seconds?
Yeah, love it. Flash knockdown. Yeah. Flash knockout by Timo Pakkilin.
Before we leave, I'm not sure if you mentioned it, but guys, make sure, if you did, forgive me, but guys, make sure when you do the contest, make sure you hashtag FightIQ so that way I know what to search so I can find them all. It's really going to help so that I don't have to go looking in 100 places. Thank you.
One thing that I want to add, Chris, for those of you that are SiriusXM subscribers, there is a channel, Fight Nation, which is dedicated to MMA, I believe boxing, but also, fake wrestling. We need you guys, because it's going to be very hard for us to get on 210 during football season. We need you guys to, lobby RotoWire to get us a slot so that we could have, a regular show on Fight Nation. I mean, again, it's not 210, which is fantasy sports, but we can certainly talk fantasy. We can talk wagering. It's a great channel. It's sort of the redheaded stepchild to fantasy sports, Fight Nation. But how cool would it be, for us to have a 30-minute or so three-man show going on, every week, or, for the pay-per-view events? So I'm speaking totally off the cuff here. I did not discuss this with Sean or Chris or anybody at RotoWire, but
no, we don't disagree. Don't worry.
Yeah. But I think if you guys lobby, our super fans out there, Nan and John Church,
what you should do is
go out there,
include Jimmy Smith Jr.
Okay. Well, look, yeah, I'll take Jimmy Smith, but if the three of us can get a show, something that we can record maybe and put it on at any time, give us an early morning slot, whatever. Just let us get some momentum going. Fight Nation, Sirius XM 93. Let's do it.
They do have a Twitter. Hit them up there, guys. Thanks, everybody, in twat. Wow. Twat. I was going to say chat.
That goes right with Glory Hall MMA.
And I want to be put on Sirius.
Yes. Twat and Glory Hall MMA. Yeah.
Unprofessional.
One, which is just slip of the tongue. You're out here throwing glory all around like it's no big deal.
Yeah, I just hope Cummings doesn't blow his load. I mean, really.
Which it's not.
Oh, God damn it.
Anyway, go to rotowire.com.
We were so close to just ending the show.
10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Make sure to enter that contest using the hashtag FightIQ. You can also use the hashtag empty laundry. Tell us
how. Don't use that one.
Use by the
good one.
Tell us how many takedowns Habib gets as the tiebreaker.
This is going to be our last show, I think, guys. They're taking us off.
Yeah,
forget it.
Man.
Tell us who wins the main event and how. Scorecards if you pick decision. I'm at the DS Sniper. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe is at Sun Tzu. Like, comment, subscribe to the podcast. Good luck in your contest. We'll see you next week.
Word. Peace out.
Later, guys.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.